central Chicago office coordinates all four studs. Well, there actually was five.
Let's see.
And now there's what? Because you mentioned California, so there was four plus Wisby. So there would be five studs.
The central Chicago office coordinates, in the new part here, I've said coordinates all the studs. The whole enterprise is called ABS. Let's see. I read so far in 49 establishes a stud at Duluth and in 52 studs in Kansas and California. These studs are run for profit, and that needs fixing. His mother and borrowing are helping you with the research. The whole enterprise is called ABS, American Breeder Service. The Central Chicago office coordinates all the studs. Is that better then?
Sure.
Eventually, improved air transportation, this isn't in there, and then frozen semen make it possible to close all the studs and concentrate ABS in Wisconsin. I mean, even Carmel eventually, right?
Right.
It is at the Asheville stud, however, on a family trip south, and Matt and I just talked about this, that Jackie sees her first nympho cow, a cow who through some anomaly, I don't know how else to put it, is always in heat and therefore always attractive to bulls. Her first artificial cow, a cow-sized sawhorse with a cowhide slung across it, which should hardly fool any bull who wasn't blind or cross-eyed, and her first artificial vagina. And then I go on to Larry Raymer's big write-up of test tube cattle and ABS and all that, which you have. So what else do you have there that's... And of course, Larry might have gotten some of his information wrong, too. I found some mistakes.
I think in your Raymer article, which was written in 1951.
1950.
50?
Yeah, here it is here.
And
November 11, 1950 was the first article.
He looks to the future at the freezing of semen, an ovotransplant. Now, would there be much in way of interest in her idea of freezing semen in 1950?
Well, let's see where I found it.
Mm-hmm. Where?
Chris Polge.
I've got Chris Polge in there.
That was 49.
And he sort of came back and forth a few times, but I figured I didn't need to describe all of his comings and goings.
And the story is, it was very embarrassing to ABS at the time, after that discovery, that J.K. Sherman over at Athbro found the article that, I think it was Nature magazine.
This is what it says in this book. Yeah. That's how, apparently,
where
how
the breakthrough was made on successfully freezing bull semen. Rock found out from Sherman about it, didn't find out from his own staff, like Elliot. And he
that should have known.
Apparently blew his stack.
Mm-hmm. Well, according to this book, he found the article himself.
Oh, it'd be Willett. Willett.
It would have been Willett.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think it was you that I was talking to, Bob, that told me, because Willett just sort of fades out here, and I think you're the one that told me he went back to academe, or was that Phil?
No, Phil went back to Michigan State and died right after a friend.
Yeah, you had two brain things. You had Kruger and...
Yeah. And I'm sure you got a difference. I actually never met Willett. I never know.
Yeah, well, you see, Willett had been a big name when I was growing up, or when he came, 49 or 50 or whatever it was. Anyway, he started... He started the research part, the study foundation for the study of genetics. And so I heard those stories from my father, because I was still at home at that time, and he was vastly interested in what Willett was doing. And then this book mentions him, but drops him. And that's that was one of the questions I asked Phil, and he said, well, he got worried, he was uneasy and figured he belonged in academia. And so he went back to, after 10 years or so, and that's when the A came.
The frozen semen research was removed from that, so how Willett was there and transferred over to Wisby. So that's when Hank Dunn had...
Oh wait, what's Lou Wisby?
Wisconsin Scientific Reading Institute.
don't you have it here, WISB?
Okay.
WSBI?
Oh, you mean it was transferred from the one, in other words, there was a real separation with these two things?
Oh, yeah.
Willett couldn't, he was more in basic research, just got to be in applied research, and that was not his field. And Henry Dunn, who was working with him, then was transferred.
And it's quoted in here.
Yeah, that was, he was transferred from the EFSO at that time, over to Wisconsin Tech Reading Institute, where the research continued there then, separate from the EFSO.
Where was AFSOG located before that building was built?
In the house.
They're on that property? They were on the ABS property?
They were on the ABS property.
Okay.
Yeah, they,
so even though they were separated, they were on the same property?
This is what I say here. I might not say it in the one you have.
I think you did. Yeah, I think you
I've
did.
I've said that it was on the same ground.
You remember that house where the field offices were?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was the processing area, the field office was. That's where they processed his lab. And then the room right next to it was stud manager. And then he went back in that other little room. That was where AFSOG started back in. That was Willett had his headquarters in that little room back there.
But where did he do the over transplant?
Oh, that was down over at AFSOG. At the okay room.
Well, they had facility there.
Yeah, facility.
They had a barn or something.
And I think Phil might have been the one that I thought there were two different things, embryo transplant and ova transplant, because of the way this book is written, and he said, no, it was the same thing.
They're two different things. That's what I had a question.
Okay, well, that's what I want to know then. Tell me about that.
I just caught it right here, when Bob gave you this. It was no ova transplant, it was embryo transplant.
Okay, well, this book says embryo transplant, but then when was the ova transplant?
Well, the ova transplants didn't come on until just a few years ago.
But here it talks in the 1950 article.
People use the word ova when they should be using embryo. They don't know the word.
But here it talks about Willett being able to flush out 27 ova in 1950.
Yeah, but he didn't transfer them. He didn't fertilize and transfer them.
Okay, then Phil was wrong when he said they were the same thing. They meant the same thing in this book.
Although Phil is right, a lot of people will write, especially in the common press, about ova transplants when they're really saying embryo transplants.
That was a question I had. I didn't realize that at that time that it was a...
Okay, when did the
ova... fertilized embryo.
It was a fertilized embryo that they transferred.
So the telegram that Dad got would have been at the birth of the first fertilized embryo.
That's right.
Early in the 50s.
The transfer of... When you say embryo, that it's a fertilized egg. Okay. An embryo doesn't get fertilized. Okay?
Wait, all right, I got to start again.
You have an egg and you have a sperm. They become fertilized and produce an embryo.
And that's an embryo, right.
That's an embryo. So you don't fertilize the embryo, you fertilize
right.
the egg.
So that the embryo,
first embryo transfer.
Willett took an embryo,
right.
already growing,
right.
and transferred it to another cow.
Right.
And when that calf was born, that's when all the telegrams went out.
Right.
So then when did ova transplant come along then?
Well, they could flush ova for years and years and years. But
because this is talking about flushing ova.
Right.
They
couldn't fertilize them. That was only 3 years ago that really happened.
Okay, see, these are the things I have wrong in here.
And that's going on downstairs now every day.
Downstairs here?
Yeah.
Flushing the ova and fertilizing them?
Well, not flushing the ova, fertilizing. The ova are taken on another piece of property.
But they are ABS ova?
Brought back here. Yeah, there it is.
And then brought back here, fertilized, and put into grid cattle?
No. Then they're grown for about 5 to 6 days. And then they're frozen.
Ah. Aha. Uh-huh. Well, that would be something that I can put in at the end then, as to here's what's going on now.
Then they're implanted.
Then they're thawed.
The sidelight to Willis early work, he should be aware that within the last 10 or 15 years, the university has celebrated their 100th and their 125th or something, sometime on an anniversary. And in their book, they took the credit for doing all that. And then I went to battle with them.
Shall I point it out? I'll be happy to. Go on.
went to battle with them and got some of the people. A fellow who was given credit for it was either dead or out of his mind then. And so I got some of his cohorts and some other people to finally convince the university that they were wrong. They were observers when Willett did the work. But when you read the university, they took all the credit for it. They didn't even mention American Breeder Service or Expo or anything.
Right. What happened was in the original...
These are wonderful stories.
in the research article, it had Willett first names first, and then Cassida, and then Bucknell or Buckner.
In what research article are we talking about?
This was in one of the scientific journals.
Oh, okay. But
and then underneath that, they usually give the location, and they said Wisconsin Scientific Breeding Institute, University of Wisconsin-Madison. Uh-huh. So everybody assumed
that it was
Wisconsin Scientific Breeding Institute was part of the university.
Uh-huh.
The university then published another book about 3 years later for a different thing, and they copied the mistake they did in the first one. I had to go back and go through about it all over again.
That one though before it was published.
I'm not sure.
I think it was said to you because you gave it to me for review.
Maybe it was a video they were presenting. But the first one, there was thousands of copies of it out, saying they took credit for it. And then the guy forgot or something, and he repeated it when he did some other something for the university. So you have to watch the boogers. They took credit for something that ABS clearly did the work on.
Yeah.
But ironic, after all the battles that went on between the university, they hated us, but now they're willing to take credit for what ABS did. One other one in there, it's not in any of these writings I've seen here.
As far as the embryo transplanted, you mentioned that making surgery unnecessary. That was the only ill thing was that they had to destroy the donor animal.
Yeah, okay, and so I didn't know how, remember, but it was...
It was totally surgical, both donor and recipient.
But the donor sacrificed his life to make
the donor... Okay, I've got that on there, but the donor sacrificed life, and the recipient didn't, of course, because she had to raise the embryo. So that...
they improved that.
So they improved that, so they certainly did, so that they could take the...
Yeah, now they can flush and implant with no surgery.
Yeah, and but they're flushing ova and not embryos.
Both.
No, they're doing both.
Doing both. So an embryo has already been implanted in the uterus when they could flush that out? Or
actually, the best eggs are obtained because it takes a while to travel down the slope.
The tube, yeah.
Okay. So to flush eggs that way, they're too old. You can't do anything with them.
Uh-huh.
Because they should have been fertilized 5 days previously.
Uh-huh.
What they do now is take the eggs directly off the ovum.
Pluck them off.
Suck them off.
Aspiration.
Okay.
And then they fertilize it. See, those are fresh ovum. So they could flush ovum before, but it had come from the uterus, but they were essentially...
pretty old ones.
Well, they wouldn't fertilize.
Uh-huh. So in order to get something that would grow, it had to be an embryo.
Yeah. And I bet that's a mistake in that article, because I never heard of Willett flushing ova. I bet that was 27 embryos.
Well, he's...
Do they have multiple ovulations techniques?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Pretty crude.
Well, this is why, you know, I figured it's dated 50, and if he's talking about it, he must have been hearing about it.
Well, people... didn't you find those two words, over-transplant? And it's not a transplant either. It's a transfer.
Transfer, not transplant. Okay, as long as this is running, I'll get these details. So you're saying that what he flushed would have been embryos? So then there weren't two telegrams, because there wasn't an embryo transfer. There was an embryo transfer telegram, but then a couple of years later there wasn't the ovotransplant, because they didn't do that until fairly recently, you said. Okay, well then that takes care of one problem. I'd only heard about the one telegram, and then I figured embryos, ova. Okay, good. Only one telegram. There were telegrams at Frosty the Calf, too. And that was particularly fun because it was Rock County, the Rock County Breeders Co-op.
Is Amos Grundahl still alive?
What, Amos?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just spent time with him in Thanksgiving time and checked out the whole Rock County Breeders thing with him. And was interested to discover that he told me that he had turned Rock down three times. And after that, Rock had nothing to do with him, wouldn't talk to him. But then I found a clipping, which he didn't mention to me, which was that Carol Peterson was hired up there. And that Rock had, and I hadn't realized there'd been a hiatus where Rock had quit the Rock County Breeders, where Amos had, to go into farming. And then for, say, 2.5 years, Carol Peterson was in charge of the Breeders Co-op. And then Rock hired him away, and Amos came back and was manager then up until, he said 59, but I found a clipping that says it was 57, when the co-op dissolved and he bought it. And he gave me the reasons why the co-op, and I've got it somewhere, which was that the whole co-op, there wasn't enough to support the co-op, and for one, another thing, there were a lot less cows. In some ways, ABS had worked itself out of business by having fewer and fewer cows, and better and better. I mean, there aren't cows in Rock County now, hardly. You go along the roads and you don't see the herds. And I talked to the vet, and he says that, his main job is horses and small animals and things like that, and fewer herds. I wanted to ask what you men thought of the bovine growth hormone, whether it puts all this research to naught, and then it was either Rock or you. You see, I've got these down somewhere, not Rock, Phil, who said that if you start with a good cow, then it's going to give a lot more milk than if you start with a poor cow. Was that you that said that over the phone to me?
Probably Phil. Before we do that, let me pick up on one before he gets too far back in the thicker. I think one of the most important things that needs to be woven in here that I think was the real contribution of Rockmanis and ABS was it established the principle of free and open competition in the AI industry. That was, I think, very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to do with that battle with the co-ops and him finally saying, to hell with you, I'm just going to compete with all of you, in essence. But that established in this country a free and open competition. It was bitter and opposed, but it established it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is then fundamentally why the cattle industry in the United States moved so far ahead of the rest of the world, because we had that competition in which there was a reward for creating better genetics, there was a reward for doing a better job, and that's why we moved so far ahead of every other country in the world, even though we were among the last to get into AI. We were the ones now that the whole world, that's why we had a huge export of U.S. genetics all over the world, is still going on. And now the rest of the world is changing, where they're moving away from, they used to have this non-competition type of thing, and more of those are now realizing that you've got to have them. So the idea of competition in the AI industry, I think, is absolutely a credit to Rock Prentice and his standing firm on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And that never gets written up many places, but I think that's one of his real contributions.
A sentence in on it at the moment, but it needs to be strengthened now that I learned
and
more.
But not many people in this country are going to give him credit for it. Looks like they didn't give him credit for much else that he did. But that's one that they all should bow down to the shrine of Rock Prentice and say, thank you, because if he hadn't done that, we would just be like other countries. We wouldn't be in such a strong position, because because he stood up and said that there should be competition.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's somewhat ironic, too, that in that early development of the company, although there was this friction with co-ops, that most of the business that ABS did was with co-ops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, local co-op.
Here we were, the first co-op that went totally apprentice.
All of them in North Carolina, the county co-op.
Mm-hmm.
And like in Indiana, it was one that they took over, one operation there, but most of the business was built on co-ops.
Yeah.
And that's what I maybe just into, because I'm going to have to leave before too long. So,
okay.
And I just, I'll just mention these, and so you'll have these are the letters I went to get for you a while ago. So this first one is my first letter to the executive committee that outlined in 1964 the changes I thought had to take place. So,
mm-hmm.
So they'll be here in chronological sequence. The second one is not a particular consequence, but it was kind of a follow-up to broaden the ABS business activity, and that was to get in cattle sales in other parts of the world. But nothing
mm-hmm.
came of that, because right behind that letter we almost went bankrupt, so we couldn't do much about that. Third one is the first letter that followed this reorganization we talked about a while ago, and it was my letter to the marketing and breeding divisions for which I was then responsible. So it outlined, and it tells many of the people and the jobs and how the structure was going to be
mm-hmm.
on that. Then there was a letter in January of 1966 to John Peterson, who was then head of the distribution department, and welcoming him to the marketing group, because distribution had always, till that point in time, been a separate line of command, separate from marketing,
mm-hmm.
which created, I think, a lot of the problems of communication. So this was to welcome him to the marketing division and outline some of the things, to confirm some of the things that he and I had been working on before, but how we were going to make all rules available to everybody, and so forth. And then the last one is in April of 1966 to a fellow named Jack Watts, who was head of the advertising group then, and it outlined again then the programs and the changes we were going to do for so our advertising would in fact be supporting the marketing effort. So those kind of fill in the gaps.
Okay,
go with this one right here.
Go with that. Yeah. All right.
Okay, then you want to touch on BGH?
Not much, because that's up. I mean, there's some of these other questions are more important, but I'm wondering how that affects ABS.
I'll have a quick shot at it then. It's a it's really,
because I'm not sure I'm going to put that in. Although just
it's,
go on.
It's much more controversial than it should be. It's really a management tool. The product itself it doesn't change the milk at all. It doesn't hurt the cattle. But it's a management tool that more farmers should be utilizing than are.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way, it doesn't help ABS. This is the same way that ABS didn't help itself. Whenever you make cows get more milk, you have fewer cows to be bred. So,
right. You work yourself out of business.
So it creates a problem in that there will be fewer cows to be bred
mm-hmm.
if everybody uses that. Secondly, and more concern to me, is that it does create problems of how do you evaluate the genetics of cattle. Because you don't know, this goes back to the old problem of genetics and environment.
Uh-huh.
And this is a special change in the environment. You can give this cow the BGH and not the one next to her, and if you don't, nobody keeps a record of that or doesn't report it, and then you look at the records, then the herd mate comparisons don't tell you the full story, because they have each had a different environment, because one got the injection and the other didn't. So when we start to find the outstanding cows out here for matings to produce young bulls, then we have one more problem to sort out. Did this cow get BGH or didn't she?
Mm-hmm.
And if she got BGH, then that's her superiority over the cow next to her. It's probably not because she's genetically any different. It's because she got this injection.
Mm-hmm.
Or if somebody wants to play games with you, they can give all the daughters of a bull in their herd the BGH and not give it to anybody else. Just like if the old days, they wanted to give extra feed to the daughters of the bull, the same type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it complicates.
Made the bull look better.
That's right.
Daughters.
It complicates our genetic evaluation. And
mm-hmm.
it just means you have to be that much more on your toes when you go out to pick the genetic material for the next generation.
Well, that's fascinating. So the controversy that the public is hearing is, oh, this is going to be...
it's all poppycock.
Yeah, okay, well...
Actually, it's a benefit. If the dairyman needs to stay in business by increasing his milk production, he has this BGH, which causes the cost of the drug. If he why it increases milk production another way without BGH. He'd have to put in more cows, add on to his barn, build another silo. He'd have that tremendous capital investment.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a godsend for the Wisconsin dairymen if they only realized it.
Well, I know that our area did because Phil Holmes, who's given me quite a bit of help on the book, he came to Dad and explained the whole thing, and Dad signed the petition or whatever it was, and they put a big ad in the Daily News about the dairymen for BGH. And so I had Phil talk to me some about it too. So that certainly Rock County, or many of the many in Rock County, seem to be seeing it as a boon.
Good.
But there's, I mean, like this whole no fertilizer bit, organic farming. I mean, when you put lime on a field, that's not chemical. That's what you need to grow alfalfa or whatever. And certain chemicals, of course, are bad, but just to be against everything without evaluating what it is and what it does is crazy.
No.
I've put some things in here without comment. I've got, Dad is not a diary keeper, but for some reason his brother gave him one, a fancy one that he must have got at something, and Dad kept notes, and off and on during 1947. So I've got a pretty good picture of what happened in 1947, which was a strange year for weather. And what was I heading for, and what was he telling about in there? Where was I?
Fertilizers?
Oh, yeah.
Chemicals?
Yeah. They were busy dusting with DDT. And I just put that in with no comment. That, you know, they were utilizing what was then accepted and so forth, and here he'll mention how much dusting he's done and so forth. And I don't know as I'm going to put in anything later about that. I'm not doing the book has to stop somewhere, and Northwestern is going to take my head off, I'm sure, when they see how much it's grown since they last saw it. But I told them it was big. When they called me and said they wanted to publish my book, I said to the editor, "You haven't even seen my book," because he had heard me read some of these stories at a conference that he and I were both staff at in Oklahoma. And he said, "That's all right, we want to publish it anyway." He said, what we'll do, I guess I must have told him that it was big in Oklahoma. He said, "What we'll do is bring it out in two hardcover volumes, and figure we'll sell those to schools and libraries and things like that, and then we'll bring out a paperback of the stories, of a lot of the stories, and hope to make money on the paperback." So he knows it's going to be big. And yet I have to, I mean, there's so many more things I could write about and in detail. And I've indicated some things. Let me check and just see some things that I wanted to ask you. Do any of you three know how the drainage method worked? The early, before the artificial vagina, where they'd go into the rectum and pull up the scrotum and let it drain down by gravity through the penis? Is that anything that... Okay, well, I'm going to have to call Walter Johnson, maybe, in Janesville. That was the way, the first way, before the artificial vagina, that they got the semen. Yeah.
No.
The drainage method.
Well, the first way is they...
Okay, tell me. Good.
They would have... It started with horses. And the stallion would breed the mare. And then after that was over, they'd go into the mare's vagina and withdraw a semen. That's physiologically impossible.
Well, that's what I thought.
That's
why I couldn't figure it out. Did you question that?
I did, yeah.
All right.
Well, John's here.
Well, that's... So then... Well, then I need to talk to Amos again. And... because I've got it in my notes. And I figured that the bull wouldn't like it if he had to go in. But if you're going in after the cow, that would be a lot less dangerous. and to drain out the semen. But of course, then you've got the whole problem of that it can't be kept clean.
That wasn't the point in those days. They didn't know even they had microbes.
I think timing in here was, I think, something in the 40s, and that they were doing that.
Earlier, I think.
First, well.
The joint time of Christ.
But they were still, you said when Amos came there, then they started to use the artificial vagina.
Right.
But I started in 43, they was using artificial vagina then. And I had never seen there.
The artificial vagina came in about 1900 in the Soviet Union. What was Russia?
Well, this is what it said in the 1950 articles, and I've put that in. Where is my...
There's a book by Enos Perry. If you want to really get into the history of get Enos Perry's book.
Enos?
Artificial insemination.
The artificial insemination of what?
Cattle. Enos Perry.
Okay, then this must be where this came from, because in Raymer's article he says there's evidence, I've quoted more or less, that 14th century Arabs knew